Here at the Dreaming Machine podcast, we've discovered the secrets of time travel.
And after rigorous discussion of the most ethical ways to make use of this power, clearly the only logical option was letting one of us pitch a show to the other and then jumping ahead in time and finding out what they thought of it.
In each episode, one of us will pitch a cartoon to someone who's never seen it before. We'll then jump forward in time after the person's seen the cartoon for themselves to immediately find out their reaction. Welcome to the Time Traveler's Pitch. So it's Joe Miller here, and today I'm with Graham. Hi, Graham.
Hi, Joe.
So, Graham, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Graham Williamson. I'm the host of Pop Screen, another podcast on the Geek Show podcast network that deals with pop stars in the movies. I write for The Geek Show, Byline Times, and Horrified, the British horror website. I'm a short film maker, and I sometimes write inlay booklets for Second Run DVD.
Excellent. And can I just say, your Pop Screen podcast is excellent. Like, it accompanies me doing the dishes many a time.
So. Oh, fabulous. When you're a dishwasher podcast, that's when you've really found a place in people's lives, I think.
Indeed. So you got a lot of great experience, but I'm guessing you never used time travel before.
I'm a big Doctor Who fan. Does that count as experience?
Kind of. Like, a lot of the research into how time travel works, we learned a lot from sci-fi movies and things like that. Plus, you know, science, of course. I guess that kind of counts, yeah.
To a lesser extent, science.
So I've been really excited because when I found out she hadn't seen the cartoon we're covering today, Over the Garden Wall, I was like, we have to, this is a great use of our time travel powers, and we have to record an episode of this, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, what we'll do is I'll give you a little like lowdown on what the show is, the context to it, like a basic guide to it. I'll be very careful not to do any spoilers for both for yourself or anyone like listening, basically, who haven't checked it out either.
Yeah.
And then we'll jump ahead and we'll give our spoiler-free thoughts first, and then we'll go more of a deep dive into the show with spoilers. So you'll be warned, everyone listening in, you'll be warned about when there are and aren't spoilers.
Okay.
But there are no spoilers for now. So basically, Over the Garden Wall is a 2014 Cartoon Network miniseries, right?
Hmm.
It's so by miniseries, that's 10 episodes of 10 minutes length each. So it's an incredibly easy watch. I guess when I think about it, this is the least justified use of time travel since given how fast you could watch the series.
Yes, we're traveling literally an hour and 40 minutes into the future.
But as we all know, when people get the ability to time travel, they start to misuse it and go way too far with it. And this is, you know, this is a small example of that. It's fine. it's not creating a paradox, it's fine. So it's I think it started off as a short, actually similar to another animation we've covered on the Dreaming Machine, Infinity Train, where the short got a good reaction and that led to the series being commissioned. So I think it was a short in the previous year, which has a very similar vibe to it, and it's an extra when you watch it on the Blu-ray. It's really interesting. But you've got a miniseries. It's led by Patrick McHale, who's an Adventure Time alumni.
Ah.
He was also I didn't realize this. He was a co-writer on the Pinocchio from Netflix.
Guillermo del Toro. Yes. Which I have seen.
Yeah, which I haven't seen yet, but I'm excited to check out when I get around to that point. So, but I had no idea of that connection. And I wonder if it was this show that led to him being joining in with that.
Perhaps.
So, like, I've seen bits of Adventure Time. I have a lot of respect for it. I mean to check it out more. But coming into this show, I hadn't really seen it. And even though a lot of people get excited about that background, that's not essential for watching the show. There's no, like, actual connection beyond that, really.
Hmm.
Very simply, the setup is you have Greg and Wirt, who are two half-brothers who are lost in these woods that are called the Unknown, right?
Yeah.
So they're lost in this mysterious forest. And they're trying to get to someone called Adelaide who can help them escape, as they understand it.
Right.
And it just jumps you straight in from that point from the first episode. So that's the setup, really. And, you know, they run into interesting folk around the forest. They run into interesting creatures. And so it's kind of got like fantasy, but more kind of like dark gothic fantasy style elements to it, if that makes sense.
Yes, no, that absolutely makes sense. Yeah.
It's got a very stylized look to it, which I personally love. I think it's great. And even if it's not your normal taste, you have to appreciate the effort and how they really go to town on it. So it's got very kind of got like 19th, like early 20th century, like Americana feel to it.
Cool, yeah.
So like, and I was thinking this through, like when I was preparing for this podcast, like it's got every element of it really ties into that. Like you could almost like frame some of the shots like in the show.
Yeah.
And it kind of looks like a painting from that kind of era. Like the fashion they have, the color palette works, they're kind of muted but still very exuberant like color palette, and the framing of the shots and the backgrounds, the kind of static backgrounds, is like it works really well. So it's got kind of this weird old-timey feel to it, but like very American based as well. That makes sense.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
And so the show came out, it had massive critical acclaim when it came out, but if anything, its stature has probably only grown over time. It's developed a big online fandom, it led to a spin-off comic, and lots of people chat about this show online, and some people are starting to have it as like a regular Halloween fixture. Like, so they watch it like once a year, like when Halloween comes around.
Cool.
I mean, I would emphasize that you don't need to watch it at Halloween. It kind of works any time, really. But I can understand with the gothic feel to it and dark. So it's a very funny show, very likable, but it is quite creepy. It's got a weird, creepy vibe to it, and it's got like elements of horror in it, but in a a palatable, like accessible way, really.
Okay.
So, and Greg and Wirt, so the voice cast on this is amazing. So you got Elijah Woods and Colin Dean voice the main protagonists. You got the fantastic Melanie Lynskey.
Oh, I love Melanie Lynskey. I know everyone says they love Melanie Lynskey now, but I am an OG Heavenly Creatures fan. So whoever you are listening to this, I have loved Melanie Lynskey longer than you have, and I will arm wrestle you over that.
Wow, yes, you're a proper fan, Graham. this is early on, so this isn't a spoiler. They run into Beatrice, who's a bluebird. So they have animals who like talk in this world, and she also needs to get to Adelaide, so they team up together. And she's got this brilliant, like, very cynical, like, sarcastic view of things. And like kind of pushing people in a way for comedic effect, you know, it works really well.
Mm.
Like Elijah Wood's character is very anxious, like a warrior kind of thing. Whereas like his younger half brother's like just joyous, like kind of gormless, but like joyous and very silly and very creative and imaginative. And they got like very distinct personalities with our main group of main three characters.
Yeah.
And they run in, and the voice cast like throughout is fantastic. They've got Christopher Lloyd, Tim Curry, John Cleese.
Wow!
And so they got like a fantastic star, kind of star-studded like voice cast, but works very well. And yeah, it's just like it's just a fantastic series. It's got I mentioned Infinity Train before, and even though that's like a very different show, it has similar strengths in that. So it's a mini series, so it's very easy to watch, and each 10-minute episode is like a mini adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So they run into a certain group of characters, go to a certain like town or place within this forest.
Yeah.
Like on their journey, but it ties together to a main story that's continuous, and this main story is fantastic, and just gets better and better as you settle into it. It's fantastic. It's very clever how it all hangs together and how the plot develops and how the characters develop.
Yeah.
So it's very binge. You can just watch it in one go. It's very easy to watch, but it's very, the way it's plotted and the story develops and the way you follow the characters works really well. So it really hangs together really, really well, start to finish.
Right.
And so that works really well for it, I think.
Because if it's like 10 minute episodes, that is shorter than basically any new release Hollywood film. By quite a long way. That's impressive.
By quite a long way, indeed.
Yeah.
And it works really well in that another strength that's similar to that other show I mentioned is there's a lot there for both kids and adults. It definitely skews towards, it's very funny. It's got a lot of like great lines. There's one great line and you'll come away quoting lines from the show. Like,
okay.
Like Eve to the confusion of like colleagues and friends, as I discovered. Like me trying to say, that's a rock fact. Which will mean nothing to you now, but it'll mean a lot like in a few weeks when we catch up again.
Right, yes.
Well, in your timescale, of course, it'll be instantaneous for me. Let's carry on.
Good save.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, so there's a lot there for both kids and adults. Like, I've watched it with my kids and they really enjoyed it. I reassured them throughout watching it at certain points, of course. But it's... Yeah. Yeah, I think its biggest fan base is probably young adults. And people who revisit it, I think. So, because of the darker elements to it. But yeah, it's a fantastic show. And the last thing I wanted to say was, as an aside, it features one of the best and catchiest music numbers ever.
Oh, okay.
Partway through. It's got this great, great musical number. It's got the kind of soundtrack really ties into that kind of that old-timey Americana, kind of mixed with Tom Waits, weirdly.
Oh, lovely.
I don't know how that connects. But it's kind of you meet some very interesting eccentric characters. But what's really important is the main protagonists. They are like likable. They're very flawed. They make lots of mistakes. But they're very empathetic and relatable. You can relate to them and understand them. And the dialogue's fantastic between. It's really well written.
Yeah. Well. I mean, that's me sold, frankly.
So, yeah, as you can tell, Graham, I'm a really big fan of this show.
Yeah.
I've seen it a few times now. I get excited about showing new people it, which is great. And so, yeah, I do think you'll enjoy it, and I'll be really interested to hear your thoughts on it. Like,
okay.
Definitely. Has that whet your appetite? How do you feel about it?
It has, yeah. I'm fascinated by that idea of it drawing on the kind of turn of the century American tall tales kind of atmosphere, because that's something that film and TV doesn't really draw from very much. So it's very evocative to me. It's kind of like, you know, Robert Eggers, yeah, the guy who did The Northman and The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
I like how he draws from genres that aren't really cinema genres, but everyone knows what they mean. You know, I can't name the last time I saw a movie about lighthouse keepers, but I sort of know what a lighthouse keeper story is. And similarly, when you were talking about the kind of time periods and tonal palette that Over the Garden Wall was drawing from, I sort of thought, oh yeah, I kind of know the thing that Joe means, even though I haven't actually seen very much that's based in that. So I liked that. I like the fact that it's quite to the point. As you know, I have a great antipathy towards big American series that just keep on going forever out of sheer self-importance. So
yeah,
nice tight 110 minutes sounds like a good call. I like the idea of it having Melanie Lynskey in it. I mean, that's never a bad thing. I think there's a lot of promising stuff in there. Yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. And you're right. It does feel very original. That's very much comes across. So that's great. Well, your life will continue. I'm going to lose, you know, weeks of my life, which is my personal, time with time travel comes personal sacrifice, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's like Interstellar or Susan.
Clearly, yeah. Okay, let's start the time machine up. See you on the other side. Phew, wow. That re-entry was tough, man, on the time travel. But I've made it in one piece.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's been literally months.
Well, I've missed out so much of my life, but it was totally worth it, despite the personal cost to me, in order to break the boundaries of science to find out your reaction to Over the Garden Wall.
Yes.
We'll ask Graham for his general thoughts, avoiding any major spoilers by the ending, and then we'll do a big spoiler warning before we go into detail on that, on the more specific points later on. So, like, spoiler-free bit first. So, yeah, what did you think? I'm dying to hear it.
Well, I enjoyed it. I think it was a like, not love, and I think part of that was because I found it quite hard to, like, adjust to watching 10-minute episodes of something. And I think the only thing that I regularly watch that has 10-minute episodes is Mandy, you know, the Diane Morgan sitcom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, about as unchallenging a watch as you can get. So it's quite an adjustment to have to sort of pace myself for a story that sort of stops and restarts every 10 minutes. I think if I watched it again with more of an awareness of how that was paced, I would really love it. But there is a lot to like in here. And I think the thing that you said that really sold me on it several months, or indeed 3 minutes ago, other than the words Melanie Lynskey, were the sort of strange, like, turn of the century Americana aesthetic of it, which, yeah, I agree, is really powerful. It's a sort of, it's an era that hasn't been mined out in popular culture. I mean, it was at the time, obviously, but it has no sort of pop cultural footprint nowadays. The only reason why anyone sets a story around this time is if they're going to make it about, like, World War One or something like that. So it feels really fresh to see, like, a fantasy story like this in that setting. And I think it has a knack for the feel of fantasy stories from around that time. It has a feeling of the more whimsical Edgar Allan Poe stories, like Hop yeah. on My Thumb. It has a feeling of sort of Mark Twain and things like that. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. I thought the voice acting is superb. The voice acting is so, so great.
Yeah, definitely.
And not just Melanie Lynskey. I think Elijah Wood's performance in it is superb. I think, I forget his name, but the kid playing Greg is...
Oh, yeah, the kid's fantastic too, isn't he?
What an incredible performance, because he's... The thing about Greg is that he is both very annoying and you like him a lot. It's like, I don't quite know how it works. He's such a pain, but he has a sort of infectious joy of life that makes you really sort of sympathize with him and enjoy him tormenting Wirt.
The voice actors are Colin Dean. Just give him a shout out. But
yeah, fantastic. I also think some of the guest performances as well are terrific, without going too far into it. But Chris Isaak in episode 2.
Yeah, yeah.
An absolute all-timer of a voice performance. Just great, and absolutely has that sort of old-timey Carnival Barker quality that fits into that world, which I guess is what happens if you've worked with David Lynch so often. You eventually become like this weird 1900s woodsman.
Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was fantastic. I like Chris Isaak anyway, and I've seen him act a few times and he's always been good, but that was so much better than I could have expected.
Oh, brilliant. So they're the elements you enjoyed. I mean, the length of it was less weird for me because I've seen Infinity Train, another series which is like 10 episodes that are each 10 minutes long. There aren't that many shows that are only 10 minutes long. I can't think of any other immediate examples, to be fair. But, like, also, like, with my... I mean, I know you're busy too, of course, but, like, with my crazy lifestyle, like, it's quite appealing sometimes to have something that's only 10 minutes long that I can squeeze in.
And I think maybe the mistake I made was that I looked at it and I thought, oh, it's an hour 55. That's basically a sort of long-ish film. You know, I can watch this in two halves easily. And I don't think you can. I think there were episodes, like episode 5 in particular, which is maybe my favourite. But part of the fun of that is it is a hard restart. It opens with Wirt and Greg in a completely different place that you've never seen before. And it really is, you know, all right, this is the start of this week's adventure. You can't watch it and expect it to flow as a movie does. So I think that was probably a mistake on my part.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say is I know what you mean. And I've never watched it one sitting on my own. Like, I think when it was first released, it did 2 episodes a night. It was like Monday to Friday type thing on Cartoon
that
Network.
Feels better, yeah.
But I know that some people use it as a regular Halloween thing. So they probably watch it in a splurge. Like, it's become like a Halloween like custom to like watch it. I mean, I would emphasize people haven't seen it. Like, you can watch it outside of Halloween. It's not a specific Halloween thing, but because of the eerie quality of it, people do watch it in a splurge at that time of year.
It's interesting, that, isn't it? That idea of it is Halloween viewing, because it's not scary. I mean, I know it's not scary in the sense that it's a PG certificate thing that is aimed at kids, but I think even in the context of media aimed at kids, I'm not sure if it's exactly trying to be scary, but it does have that kind of weird autumnal kind of backwoods vibe to it. It's very like suited to Halloween viewing.
I mean, autumnal's like a good descriptor, actually. Yeah, you're right.
It's the colour palette, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And all the trees, of course, as well. But but also, it's got this unsettling. Yeah, not. I agree. It's not out and out scary, but it is unsettling.
Yeah, I think there are some surprisingly emotionally heavy bits in it. Although I think some of those we will get into in the spoiler section. But there is some real delight in it as well. You know, I think. Just the opening to episode 2 where Greg is just walking along blowing raspberries, and you get the sense from work that he has been doing this for longer than you can possibly imagine. It's got a real kind of, it's like Kate Beaton at her silliest, you know, it's got that real kind of glee in the power of cartoons to just do something that is really, really daft, unapologetically so, and I liked that.
Yeah, he's kind of like really daft, but in a clever, like, unusual, like in a weird way. Like, so it's still quite appealing. Like, just like his obsession with naming the frog or like the character.
Yes. Rock like, facts.
Yeah, you beat me to it. I was about to say, just saying, it's a rock fact, which I've used at work to everyone's confusion. I've been trying to slip down to normal conversation, but.
Yeah.
So he's silly and it's kind of slapsticky, I guess, in how he is his face and his character and his performance, but it's also quite like, I don't know, he's got this weird like clever edge to him.
Oh yeah, definitely. He's like a holy fool, isn't he, Greg? He's like completely guileless, but every now and then he will just laser in on the crucial plot twist of the episode before anyone else can spot it.
Yeah, so now that's pretty cool. Or like, we're turtle rich. I love that that phrase as well. But yeah, now that's pretty good. Any other general thoughts, or should we go to the spoiler section?
I think one of the things that you always have to ask with this kind of modern media that's playing around with fairy tale tropes is how much sort of gravity does it take them with, and it this plots a really good course between the twin extremes of like an absolutely poor-faced, dismal kind of Disney live action remake or Shrek Part 94, where everything's completely flippant and there's no sort of magic in it whatsoever. I think, you know, when Greg lays out the candy trail in the first episode, there's a fun to to recognizing that he knows what kind of story he's in and he knows this will be useful. But that never tips over and becomes smug. It never really winks at the conventions of fairy tales. It never lampshades how silly their plot devices are. It just assumes a bit of audience knowledge and then uses that as a springboard to do their own thing. So I really liked that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, actually. That I had that respect for it and you didn't just go for the cheap humour, I guess, like, as you could say.
Original fairy tale stuff as well. You know, every time they introduce a sort of animal or a mythological character, it's something completely original, but that has that authentic fairy tale or folklore kind of vibe that makes you think, oh, yeah, I did hear about that once. You know, there was a late season episode of The X-Files about that once. I did once read a 14 Times article where someone went out hunting for that thing literally existing, even though, of course, none of these things have any existence outside of over the garden wall.
Or do they?
Yeah. What if dinosaurs did have big ears?
Wow, that's a whole digression we could go down, but let's continue. Yeah, I think I mean there were moments when I saw it that did threaten to tip into go too much to the silly tone, like the horse and the gorilla and stuff like that, but for me, like, it was just funny enough and cute enough to get away with it at those moments, so I was still on board with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it helps that some of the more overt humour is still quite weird in that kind of post-Adult Swim way, like Potatoes and Molasses. Where
delightful.
It's a great song, and part of the humour of it is it just goes on forever, and you think you should not be able to do this kind of a time-waster gag in a 10-minute episode, but they really timed that right, I think.
Yeah, it's such a fantastic song. It really is.
I'll be fascinated to listen back to this because, of course, unlike you, I haven't come straight here and I have no memory of what I actually said in the first half of this episode. So it'll be interesting to see how my expectations have played out. But yeah,
I mean, apart from the length of the episodes, like, were there any things that surprised you that you weren't expecting based on my pitch?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say there was anything that I absolutely wasn't expecting, but I think the way they spanned some of these things was a bit surprising. I thought it was surprising, particularly considering the title, which seems to promise this, that it's not kind of an Alice in Wonderland story. It's not a story about people going into an enchanted wood. It opens with them already there and already lost. And I thought, oh that's a bit of a surprise. And I was a bit surprised because sometimes I think those are the most exciting kind of story beats in those kind of stories. But I didn't miss it this time.
Yeah,
and that was nicely wrong-footing. I guess that's another example of what I was talking about with the episode structure, where they will open in what you would say is like the middle of this week's story and somehow manage to sort of unpick it and bring it to a conclusion within this 10-minute length.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think that's maybe good timing then to go into the spoiler zone section.
I think so, yeah.
So spoiler alert, dear listeners, and let's get to it. So I have lots of questions. I just want you to just really talk about your thoughts. But so you talk about just the first episode, you're just there, which I was also really surprised by. What was your reaction at the start of episode 9?
Oh, man. Episode 9 was the most emotionally heavy, I thought, for me, to the extent where I almost felt like the kind of continuing plot line of it peaked there. I think, again, maybe because I am watching this in a way that was not optimal, I don't have very strong feelings about the final episode, which surprised me a little.
Mm.
But I thought the bit where Wirt is told you'll be no good to your brother dead, and he says I was never any good to him alive, is an extraordinarily heavy thing to have in the penultimate episode of a kids' show.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's a lot of how I feel about the ending. I have like lines and ideas of it that I can pick out, and I have a vague sense that it worked, but I don't have a strong grasp on it as I wanted. And I think largely because, you know, I watched these in two blocks of five, and I'd sort of felt the story had started and restarted so many times that I was kind of stumbling a bit in a lot of ways by the ending.
Yeah, I guess, I read up like afterwards on the making of it, and I think Patrick McHale said it was episode 9 was meant to be episode 1 in the original version.
Really?
When he was making it. And he realized it was more exciting to, like, there were no rules prohibiting him. And he said that was a major breakthrough for him. So it was just quite nice that you could, the whole explanation for why they're there, you could just shift like to the end.
And yeah.
It kind of like shocked me, the opening. I thought it was really clever. And it was like getting really dark, the episode before and the bit after as well, like with his brother and their relationship, and like really self-examining like how he's been as a brother, you know? That's really what a lot of the show's about, I think.
I think part of the ingenuity of that move is it allows you to explore that stuff in more detail, because you've put it at a point where the audience is already very invested in these characters. If it was in episode 1, you might think, well, you know, I haven't watched these guys do anything, so I don't know why I should be that fussed about their relationship. You know, it might feel a bit force-fed in that way, a bit like the emotions being pushed through rather than coming out of the story.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember when I first watched the series, like episode 9 like blew me away. I thought this is genius. Like, yeah. This is brilliant, like how they've tied it together. It's not just some cute adventure. Like, well, I'm not dismissing it. It's like a really good show, but there's something that's been happening this whole time. And the ending of that episode 9 is so shocking. Like how they end up, it's like, oh my God, that's how they started.
Yeah.
And that's what he's been quietly referring to, with very little, like for kids, for what's kind of a show like for kids, like my kids have watched it, like very little explanation about when he refers to, you know, Jet, like Thunderberg or whoever his like nemesis is at school, or so little explanation, and just like treating the audience as smart enough to like try to put the pieces together. I do kind of get that. I think when I first watched the season, episode 10 was okay. It wasn't. I think when I rewatched it, it kind of grew on me a bit, and I gave it more credit partly because I've read a lot of stuff online about it and the different theories. And it's not as neat and perfect an ending as it may seem on first viewing. I don't know if you picked that up a bit.
No, I think that would definitely be a rewatch thing for me as well. I think that point about it being very subtly seeded for a kid's show is true. And I think part of why you can do that on a kid's show is, like, my main memory of consuming media as a kid is that if I liked something, I became obsessed with it in ways that you never become obsessed with something as an adult, an absolute all-consuming obsession. So I think the way that these things are seeded in with little references is very well calibrated to how kids enjoy their favourite shows.
I mean, that's a good point, but I'm also smiling because as an adult, I get really obsessed by things and like zoning in things. But that maybe says more about myself.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. Maybe I'm just scatterbrained.
I mean, there's theories. What I would say is if you see the show again, if you ever see it again, there's a lot of discussion about Greg and the bell and the frog in the last few scenes. And what that actually means, and whether it is actually what you see.
Oh.
So, like, yeah, like if you just Google it, there's like some really interesting discussion, like really interesting theories. Because yes, they're back, but like the bell, like something like the bell shouldn't be ringing, or like the frog shouldn't. A bit of it doesn't quite make logical sense.
Right.
And then they go through the montage of like all the people you visited, and that there might be little like clues in there as well, like some people theorize. So it's just like there's interesting like Easter eggs and like different theories. And also people go, when I rewatched it, some of the things that happened during the season were interesting about whether it is just like a purgatory state, which is like, I think the main theory, that's what I think. That's why I think that over the garden wall, it's is purgatory.
Yeah.
Or if it's something even darker. I've read a very well-written theory about it being like further than actual purgatory and the last scene like cementing it, which is a very like dark read of it. But so I just, so I do get, it's a bit like the main dramatic tension is probably with episode 9 and episode 8. Episode 8's great, by the way, as well.
Yeah, it is.
I just loved like Greg's like flight of fancy and you got...
Yeah.
And what, which is kind of like really cute and lovable, but really dark at the same time. But yeah, episode 10, like I do get what you mean. It's a little like underwhelming after, but it's like if you rewatch it, there's a lot of interesting stuff. Well, maybe it's not actually. Maybe it's over theorizing, over analyzing. I don't know.
A lot of it happens a lot with the ending of serialized television, doesn't it? And sometimes the ending actually is disappointing, and sometimes, you know, the ending is not disappointing, but everyone's got their own personal final episode in their head, and the ending of a show closes off all those possibilities. I mean, I remember when it was a very accepted thing for people to say the final episode of The Sopranos was bad, and nowadays people who say that are like rightly pelted with bricks. But it's the shock of having a show come to an end and being released into the world and having to figure out what it means sometimes.
There's so much great discussion about the ending of The Sopranos, which I only like fitfully saw bits of, but I recognize it as a good show. Like I remember Pearls Before Swine cartoon at the time, where the joke was that the cartoonist like dropped his ink over the page and that's why it went all black. It's like, oh come on, we're about to see what happened. But yeah, you're right, like people like is viewed as one of the best endings now. There's so many theories.
That backlash has aged very badly.
It is interesting. But you know, I'm glad you generally enjoyed it and that there was stuff for you to get out of that.
I did, yeah. I mean, I will say that I'm tempted to give the ending another go because I think the endings of individual episodes are often very good indeed. Like I mentioned episode 5 as my favourite. The idea that these two castles have accidentally built and built until they're the same castle is brilliant. It's like something from a Mervyn Peake novel, and there is such a sort of cartoonish logic to it. You know, the first thing we see is the king of that castle saying, you know, I built so much, I've forgotten all of the bits that I built. So as in any great mystery, the solution is right there in plain sight from the opening scene, but it still surprises you when it comes to that conclusion. I think that's great. And that sort of, that does make me think that the ending probably does have a lot to give that I have not got out of it on one viewing.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really good point, and that is a really fun, really great episode. I mean, the only episode I didn't enjoy as much as the first episode's good, but I think the thing with the woodsman and the beast and whatever, like I think the later episodic adventures are a bit more appealing, just on a personal perspective. Like because I just know some people have been put off by that episode a little bit, and I always say like just get past. It's still a good episode, but it's just one of my least favourite ones. It's like, just keep watching and you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think I didn't have a problem with the first episode, but that second episode with the pumpkin cult was just the point where I thought, okay, this is really good.
Yeah.
So I do kind of understand that.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favourite ones with the pumpkins. Like, it's crazy. And then the solution to it of just like do a little bit of work. It's like, oh, only a few hours? Okay, that's fine. But then like he says, oh, we'll see you again soon. And there's like tons of theories about that line. But when the pumpkin says that, like he says, oh, like we thought you were ready to come here. We'll see you again soon enough.
Okay, yes, yeah. I suppose part of what it's playing with is that idea of the hero's journey, and it's playing with it in ways that, you know, as we said about the Trail of Candy, is knowing without ever being smug, without ever just making a joke out of the whole thing. You know, when it episode 4, for instance, everyone recognizes Wirt as a pilgrim, and they know that being a pilgrim has great heroic status, and they look back through all of these, what we have viewed as sort of random, light-hearted adventures, and say, ah, no, these are stages on your hero's journey, which suggests they've actually just wandered into a town of, like, literary critics, maybe. but it has that element where everything is both random and it also feels strangely preordained. There is definitely a time for them to meet the pumpkin people. And maybe it links in with that other thing we were talking about seasonality. You know, there's a, when you look back at the kind of folklore the show is drawing on, a lot of it is done to mark changing seasons. Certainly if you're showing pumpkins, that's obviously got a massive seasonal resonance.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a part of it as well, this idea of everything happening in its natural stages.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. I didn't think of it that way, but yeah, definitely. Excellent. That's very good. Well, thank you for partaking in this crazy science experiment.
Adventure, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, the least I can do, given, like, the personal risk to ourselves to do this, is to just give another shout-out to your excellent Pop Screen podcast.
Thank you. Yes, yeah, it's available on Anchor FM or through thegeekshow.co.uk, and every fortnight we take another movie either starring about or by a pop star and subject it to rigorous and stupid critical examination.
Indeed. It's a great listen. And also your reviews on is it Letterbox? Is
that what Letterbox, the website's called again? Yeah.
I enjoy those reviews too. So that's excellent. Thank you. And thanks for listening, everyone. Love to hear your thoughts about Over the Garden Wall too. If you've not seen it, please watch it. It's really good. It's worth it.
Yeah.
And thanks so much. Take care, everyone.